Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bova Metzia Daf Ayin Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Dalid. The Dibur HaMaschil of the Gemara, Hoya Hu Tchila L'Kaitzrim. This is, of course, a quote from the Mishnah back on Daf Ayin Beis Amid Beis. Before we begin the actual Gemara text, let us glance in the margin where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Machlokes Rav Ushmuel. We'll see a disagreement between Rav and Shmuel. Mahu hageder shel yeshlo, kedei shiehe efshir lifsoik alav. The Mishnah spoke about not paying money for delivery of a product later on unless a public price has been established. However, if you are dealing with someone that has the product, you can deal, we'll say, privately with him, pay him money for delivery of that which he has. The concept here focuses on his having the item. Let us say he has the raw materials of the item that you are paying for. Is that considered as if he has the item? In our note here, we've highlighted in quotation marks the concept of yeshlo. He has it. Once we establish that he has the item, then when you are paying for it, even though you are going to get delivery of the item later on when its price is higher, nevertheless, there is no problem of interest because it's considered as if you have taken possession of it right away. And there's no agar notar, there's no profit that you gain from waiting, because the idea of immediate delivery there circumvents or obviates the issue of waiting for it. And once we don't have the issue of time delay, there's no issue of ribis. We continue in our note. Klomar, haim nitan lifsoik alav. Klomar, haim nitan lifsoik al dvorim shechaserim shlovei hachona. Can you pay for things? We said you've got the raw materials, you've started the manufacture process of the final item, but it's still missing several stages. Those are the the shlavim, shlavei hachana, the stages of preparation are still missing. So we now turn to the Gemara. Omar Rav, Mechusar Shtayim Poisek, Sholosh Eino Posek. If the supplier has not only the raw materials, but he started the production process of the item, but it's missing two stages till final production, you can put money down for delivery of that final item for delivery later on. And once again, even though there's no public price that's been established yet, it's not a case of Yotza Hashar. Nevertheless, he has the item. However, if it's missing Shalosh, three stages till final production, till it is ready, Eino Posek, you cannot put money down for its for the final product's delivery later on, that having the problem of Ribbis. Ushmuel Omar. Shmuel has a totally different approach to this matter. Bidei Adam, if the missing stages are something that under human control, then afilu mea posek, even if it's missing 100 stages, but they're all stages of production that man is in control of, you can put money down for delivery of that item when it's ready. However, bidei shamayim, if the missing stages are dependent on natural factors, forces of nature that are, we say, governed by heaven, afilu achas eno posek, even if it's missing just one stage till final production, but that one stage is something that's dependent on nature, then you cannot put money down for its delivery. As we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice the use of a double underline marking on the side of the Gemara, under the Mivneh heading, Dugmois shel HaMishnah de Poiskim Aleh. We'll see examples quoted from the Mishnah where you can put money down for the item. The house marking that will repetitive in our sugya, one of our series markings, highlights the word Mechuser. And we explain, Kushios. These represent questions. HaMishnah Ma'afsheres Psiko Afilu Avvorim Shechaserim Shlavei Hachana, where the Mishnah allows for putting money down even though significant stages are yet missing. The Gemara, Tanan, we ask on Rav, Poisek Imoy Al Hagodesh. You can put money down for grains that are in a pile and you are expecting delivery of let's say processed grains. Right now they're merely in a pile, and yet it's okay to pay for them and expect delivery later on when they are when they've been processed. That's one stage. They are lacking. They haven't been placed in the sun for drying out. Ulamedash, and to be threshed. Umidra, and to be winnowed. So how can the Mishnah allow you to put money down when it's only in the, we'll say, the goddish stage? So the Gemara answers, Kagon deshoda b'chama v'yovesh. We're talking about a pile of grains that has already been in the sun and has dried out. So it's so the grains are missing only the threshing and the winnowing stages, which represent only two stages till they're ready for actual delivery. The Gemara asks, Ulishmuel di Omar, bidei shamayim afilo achas eino posek, even if it's only one stage till it's finally ready, but that stage is dependent on natural factors, you're not allowed to put money down for it, to pay for it. V'ha mechuser midra de bidei shamayim hi, is it, even if, let us say, you had grains that were dried out and threshed, but it's still missing the winnowing. Now, and the winnowing is a process whereby you toss the grains heavenwards, and the wind blows the chaff or debris away from the heavier kernels that fall earthwards. And that, from the Mishnah, would certainly appear to be okay. But according to Shmuel's standard, that if it's if the production stage is dependent on natural factors, in this case the wind, you're not allowed to put the money down for it. And yet the Mishnah seems to have no problem with that. The Gemara answers on behalf of Shmuel, Efshe benafisa, nafisa are fans. So the winnowing process is not dependent only on natural wind. It can be accomplished through something that we term bidei odom. And as far as Shmuel is concerned, if the missing stage is something that human control is the characteristic, then it's okay. It's okay to pay for it because it's considered as if it's all ready and there's no waiting factor. V'al ha'ovit shilanovim, the Mishnah said, you can pay money for wine as long as the grapes that the vintner has are piled up in the ovit, which is a vessel in which grapes are piled up. They heat up, soften, becoming ready for wine making. Nevertheless, the Gemara asks, but v'hol mechusar michmar, the numbers, of course, we didn't emphasize that before, but I think it's obvious, we have stages before it's ready to be delivered as wine to the customer. Look how many stages are missing. V'hol mechusar michmar, v'yuli lebe matzarto, lemeidash, ulemingad. Let's explain what they are. Michmar is heating up. We mentioned that the grapes are piled up in a vessel called an ovit for the purpose of heating up. When they're compacted, there's a heat level that increases, softening them, making them ready for pressing. But all the Mishnah said is that you can pay money for wine as long as the grapes are piled up in the ovit, but they haven't heated up yet. And viuli lebei matzarto, that's the second stage, is the grapes then being loaded onto the wine press, ula meidash, and to be crushed, ula mingad, and once they're crushed and the liquid flows, then you mingad. Rashi says limsho hayayin el habor shelifnei hagas. That's to draw the wine to the pit that is situated in front of the press. So all of these stages are missing, and yet the Mishnah says you can pay for it. Is that not a kashan rav? So the Gemara answers, Kidetoni Rabbi Chiya, as Rabbi Chiya explains later on, Al Hakoimer Shel Zesim, he speaks in the context of olive oil production. So, and there he mentions the payment for the olive oil when it's an ekomer shel zeisim. So hachanami al hakomer shel anovim. We had the term ovit, here you see the term komer. The point is that you're paying money for the wine when they have already heated up, when the grapes are piled up, but they've also already heated up. So that stage is not lacking when you're paying for the wine. So what? But v'hol mechusar tlas, we numbered four stages. So we discounted the first one because when you're paying for it, it's piled. The grapes are piled and heated up already. But nevertheless, there are three stages that are still missing. The Gemara answers, va'asra da hu dezoven hu denogin. The Mishnah features a locale where when one is buying wine, he is the one that does the nogid process, the nogid procedure, which was that number four procedure. He's not, the producer isn't expected to do that to begin with. So that you're paying for grapes that have already heated up, so what's lacking? Using the expression we have a few lines before, yulu lebe matzarta and lemeidash. The rest is of no concern to us anymore. V'al hamaton shel zeisim, you can pay for olive oil as long as the olives are at the maaton stage. The maaton being they've been piled up. V'hol mechusar michmar v'yuli lebei dapi ulemeidash ulemingad. Well, still, how is that allowed? Four stages of production are missing. They haven't heated up. After they finally are heated up, they naturally develop heat because they're compressed. They're piled one upon the other. Then they are put into the press itself. Then there's the crushing. Then there's the drawing of the liquid off of the press. Four stages are missing. Tony Rabbi Chiya, al hakoimer shel zeisim. What you're paying for are zeisim that have already heated up. The Gemara asks, but ha ikot tlas, but you're still missing three stages. Answer, ba'asra dehu de zoven hu de nogid. The locale of the Mishnah is where the one who pays for the olive oil is the one that does the what we call the fourth stage. It's not the producer doesn't do it. So as far as your relationship with the producer, that's not a stage that is missing. The al habitzim shel yoitzer, you can pay for pottery, for clay vessels, as long as the potterer has the beats him is the dirt and the water ready for making the clay. Amai, why is that allowed? V'hol mechuser lepufi v'yavushi yuli la'tuno lemisraf ulemepak. Five stages are missing. Even though he may have the dirt that's mixed with the water, which we call the bitzim shel yotzer, it's got what called clumps of raw clay, but still between the clump of raw clay and a final product, you have five stages, and they are the lipufi is the shaping of the vessel where it's spun around and a interior is formed. So that if you take a clump of clay and you press in the middle of the clump and you spin it around on a, for example, on a potter's wheel, you'll develop an internal airspace of a future vessel. That's the lipufi stage. Yavushi, yovesh, to the drying out. Yuli latuna, after it's dried out, it's put into a kiln. Atuna is a stove, a kiln, where it's fired up. The misraf, and then after it's put in the kiln, then it has to be heated up. That's considered a fourth stage. The mapak, and then the removal of it from the kiln. So how can, according to Rav, that be allowed to pay for it when it's only in the bitzim stage? The Gemara answers, Kagon, what you are paying for is demlapfa viovishu. Those are stages 1 and 2 have already taken place. At that point, you're paying for the final product. Vahikotlas, but still, aren't three stages still missing? And we had five stages, so we knocked out two, there remain three. The Gemara answers, Basra du dezoven, the Mishnah is speaking in a locale where the one who was the customer, the one who's buying the product, who the mapik, he is the one that takes care of stage 5. So as far as the relationship with the potter, with the producer, only two stages that he is responsible for are missing. Vial hasid mishishka'ainu bakivshan. Sid is lime. You can pay for lime, which is a product that's made by burning rocks in an intensely hot furnace, where eventually the rocks become pulverized, and from that you produce the sid, which is a type of lime paint or lime coating that one uses in building. So you can pay for the final sid product mishishkenu bekivshan when the raw materials, the stones, are placed in the furnace. But we didn't say that the furnace was hot. It was simply placed in the furnace. V'hol mechuser, but still stages are missing. Makle, the actual burning. Vafuki, the removal. Umeidak, and the crushing or pulverizing. So the Gemara answers, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, ba'asra, the hudazoven, who, ha'hu, dayik. It's a place where the one that is the customer, the one that's Zovin that buys it, he takes care of that third stage. So that as far as his dealing with the producer, only he's allowed to pay for it when two stages are missing, Makle and Afuki. Afuki, as we said before, is the removal. Ula Shmuel Jamar Bidei Odom Afilu Mea Posek, according to Shmuel, that says, if you're dealing with stages of production that are human dependent, even if 100 stages are missing, you can pay for it. Then lama li mishyeshkenu bekivshan? Why does the Mishnah seem to say that you can pay for the sid only once the rocks have been placed in the furnace? You don't even need that. All you need is a guy that has a furnace. He's got rocks. And that's it. You don't need to have the rocks already in the kivshon, in the furnace. So the Gemara answers, Ema, as far as explaining the Mishnah according to Shmuel, it's as follows, Mishiroi l'shakoi b'kivshon. When the rocks have been designated, the man has rocks, he has wood, all the basic raw materials are in the producer's possession, and all that's missing is the actual physical stages that lead to the manufacture of the sieve. But as long as he has all the basic raw materials, no matter how many production stages are missing, that is really of no concern. You'd be allowed to pay for the sid at that early stage. V'al habitzim shel yotzer. Tonu rabbanon. Ein poiskin al habitzim shel yotzer ad she ya'asu. Divrei Rebbe Meir. According to Rebbe Meir, one is not allowed to pay for clay pots, even though the potterer has the clods of clay until the pots are actually made. Omar Rebbe Yehuda, Bamed Vamurim. Let me make a correction. The term Achiasu is a reference to until the potterer has made them into bitzim. These are clumps of clay ready for production. So, as far as Rebbe Meir is concerned, you can't pay a potterer for bitzim until he actually has the clumps of clay ready for production. Omer Reb Yossi, Bame Devar Mamurim. Under what circumstances are we insistent that the clumps of clay are all ready? Meaning, it's not just that he has the dirt and he has water, but he's fashioned them into bitzim. Be'ofer lovon. That's when you're dealing with white earth. Avol be'ofer shachar, when you're dealing with black earth. Kegon kvar chananya v'chavroseha, kvar shichin v'chavroseha. These are names of different locations where the clay was made from black earth. There it is different. Poiskin, you can put money down, you can pay a potterer, even if he doesn't have ready clods of clay, all prepared. Afal pi shein lozeh, yesh lozeh. We didn't explain yet the main point. So let's go over it again. Rabbi Yossi says, "Bamed vamurim, when do we require that the bitzim, the clods of clay, are already prepared? That's when you're dealing with ofer lovon. Ofer lovon, white earth, is not commonly found. It's expensive. And Rashi says, Bamed vorm shetzor shehei muhan biyado, ba'ofer lovon, she'eno motsui, shehoyu machnisen oisoi, ein machnisen oisoi elo megubol v'osui bitzim. When white earth was found, it was collected, and it was made into, it was fashioned or mixed with water, ready for production. However, Rashi continues, Avol ba'ofer shachar, shehu motsui b'mekoymoi. The black earth, which is commonly found, ein sor shei biyodoi. You don't need the clay to be already in the hands, in the possession of the potterer that you're dealing with. Shim ein lozeh, yesh lozeh. If this one doesn't have it, someone down the road has it. We continue now in the Gemara. Ameimar Yohiv Zuzi Mechi'aili Afra. Ameimar would pay for pot, for clay vessels, once the dirt was piled in his house. Rashi adds, and we're dealing with black dirt. So when would Ameimar put money down for his pots? When the potterer had the dirt accumulated, piled in his house. Kiman, well, Amemar's practice is based on whom? Ika Rebbe Meir, Ho'omar Avshiyasu. If it's based on Rebbe Meir, it would have to already be at a clay level, not at a dirt level. Ika Rebbe Yossi, and if Amemar is based on Rebbe Yossi, Ho'omar Afapi She'ein Lozeh Yesh Lozeh. According to Rabbi Yossi, you don't need to even be in possession of the dirt. As we said, Rashi added that we're dealing with black dirt. even if he doesn't have it at all, he can. The guy that you're paying can always go down the block, go to a neighbor, and get it from over there. So once again, there's no waiting factor per se. Li'olam k'Rabbi Yosi, Amemar's practice was like that of Rabbi Yosi. Uba Asrei da Amemar Oshik Afra, and in Amemar's town, dirt was relatively expensive. E da Ma'ili Afra, if the dirt has been brought into the potterer's house, Samcha Daite V'Yohiv Luhuzuzi. Then there is a sense of reliance and confidence. That's somcha daite, and people will pay for it. Rashi says somcha daite dechol echad. Everyone is reliant on his going ahead and making the product. And one who would back out, Rashi says, would be guilty of a mishapara, of a curse for backing out. Once the money is paid, the elo. If, however, the dirt has not been brought in yet, and we're saying in his locale it was expensive and it wasn't easy to come by, so lo some hadaite, people wouldn't have a sense of confidence ahead of time paying for it. And Rashi says dilmo lo some hadaite, people don't have a sense of confidence. Dilma lo mashka chafra, the potterer might not even find the dirt necessary. Veleka mi shepora, and there wouldn't be any curse for backing out if he doesn't have the dirt in his possession. Shu atzma lo nismach olav, elo nosan al hasafik. The customer himself wasn't really relying, he was just paying the money in case he gets the dirt. He put the money down in doubt. The Gemara continues. Upoisek imo al hazevel kol yomois hashana. This we saw in the Mishnah back on daf ayin beis omid beis. We saw the opinion of the Tanakhama. The first opinion is that which was quoted just now in the Gemara's Dibur Hamaschil, and then when you continue reading in the Mishnah, you find Rabbi Yossi says you don't put money down, you don't pay for Zevel unless he has it piled up in his possession, the one that you're paying. And the Chachomim Matirim. So when you read the Mishnah and you get to the Chachomim, it says, and they allow, in other words, they don't require it to be piled up, and they allow paying for Zevel all throughout the year. So the Gemara asks, the third opinion in the Mishnah would seem to be the same as the first opinion in the Mishnah, a classic case of redundancy. So why are they there? Omar Rava, Rava says they're not. There isn't redundancy. There are actually two different opinions. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Yemois Hakshomim Iko Binayu. Literally, the rainy season will be a point of difference. Can you pay for Zevel? We explained when we were learning the Mishnah that Zevel, which is fertilizer, that's referred to in the Mishnah, is that which is made by, I think that the you might use the term compost, where all kinds of vegetable and fruit, organic debris is trampled upon by the public, and in the course of time, after it's trampled upon and sitting for a while, it then becomes useful as fertilizer. So Rashi at the top line explains, and here Rashi spells out all three opinions of the Mishnah, and when we finish with the Rashi, then you'll see the Tanakhama and the Chachomim that appear in the Mishnah are in fact different. Yemois Hakshomiko Benai, Rashi at the top, Tanakhama, Kol Yemois Hashona Komar, he says you can pay money for Zevel, whether in the summer or in the wintertime, Upoligoli Rabbi Yossi, Vomer, and Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says, Lo Shnoi Mosacham, Lo Shnoi Mosacham, and the season is irrelevant, Ach Yehe Lo La Mocher Zevel Ashbos, until the one you are buying from happens to possess fertilizer in his supply. The Chachomim Matirin Af Al Pi She'ein Lo Yesh Lachirim, even though this supplier doesn't have, others have Zevel. Well, when is that the case? So this, in fact, is dependent on the season. Im Yemois Achamo Hein, if it's the summer season, Shakol Yeshlan Zevel, everyone at that point has fertilizer, Shekvar Nirka V'Nishot B'Yemois Achshamim, during the rainy, muddy season, all the organic debris has been trampled and rotted and hence ready for use as fertilizer. But you need the winter season for that to have taken place. Vinas is Zevel, and by the end of the winter season, it now has become Zevel. And therefore, we can speak, when we speak about two seasons, we have the winter season and the summer season. So Yemos Hachamo, in the summer season, it is ready. But according to the Chachomim in the Mishnah, you wouldn't be able to pay someone for fertilizer because it's simply not readily available. Upoisek imo keshar hagavoah. We continue in the Mishnah, and that is a quote from the Mishnah. And on this, in Rashi, upoisek imo keshar hagavoah, akula masnisen koi. This idea of paying money for delivery of a product, and in the event that the product falls in price, you expect to get delivery of the product at that lower price. You expect to benefit by the fact it became cheaper. So if you paid $10 for 10 pounds of apples, and later in the season $10 will get you 20 pounds of apples, you expect to receive 20 pounds of apples. And that's not going to be classified as a problem of ribis, of getting more than you paid for. So Rashi says, Akula Masnisen Koi. This point of the Mishnah is relevant to everything in the Mishnah. Shetzorach Lipsukimo, you have to make a formal agreement. Shim Yuzlu, V'yifchisu Deme Hashar, that if the item you paid for becomes cheaper. V'yigba, and here you see the word Govoa used in the explanation of Rashi. V'yigba Shar HaPeros Yoyser B'Sala, in other words, the amount of Peros will literally go higher, means it will increase. You'll get more for the sela, the money you paid for. Sela is a denomination of currency. You'll get more for your dollar, so to speak. She yitein lo kishar azol. The im lo posa kein. And if you didn't make a formal agreement to get the benefit of the drop in price of the product, yikabel al korchu kishar she posa, then you'll have to accept the product based on the price at the time you paid for it. So if you paid $10 for 10 pounds of apples, at the time you paid the supplier $10, $10 would fetch 10 pounds of apples, and you did not specify, I want the benefit of Shar HaGavoa, so that when delivery takes place later on, and in fact $10 would get you 20 pounds of apples, but you didn't specify that, you will have to accept 10 pounds of apples because that was the price at the time you paid for it. That is the din of the Mishnah. Even though we gave an oral introduction, let us glance in our margin where we have the Nosei, the topic heading, Bizman Sha'odom Shilem Meroish, in cases where a person paid in advance, Ulifnei Aspokas Haschura, and before the supply of the goods, Yordu HaMechirim, the price went down. Ha'im Yesh Tzorach LaLokeach LaHasnois B'Feirush Meirosh, is it necessary for the purchaser to make a specific or explicit condition or stipulation at the outset, Shupoisek Al Shar HaGavoah, that he is paying with that in mind, that if the price of the item falls, he wants delivery of a greater amount of goods. Verak oz yochol laharviach, and only if he states so explicitly can he benefit from the drop in price. Oy gambli tnai mefurosh hu yakabel es hascher lefi shar gavot, or possibly even without specifying so explicitly, he is entitled to receive the benefit of the price fall. As we go on in the Gemara, we'll notice a double underline marking, and that introduces she'elos she'shalu es Rav Papa, questions that are presented to Rav Papa. Now we turn to the Gemara, second line from the top, Hahu gavro dioiv zuzi l'nidunya debe chamua. To appreciate what we just said, we look in Rashi, just a couple lines down from here. Hahu gavra dioev zuzi l'nidunya debe chamua hu posak im moichri nidunya tachshite abonos. There was a man who paid money for nidunya, literally is a dowry. You have a man that's getting married, and his father-in-law provided money for the purchase of jewelry. So the son-in-law or the groom took the money and presented it to jewelry manufacturers. V'nosan lahem mois liyos muchonim liyom ploni, and he gave them money for the jewelry to be ready at a certain date. V'asa'oi chomiv shliach livsok, the father-in-law appointed the son-in-law as an agent to pay the manufacturers for the jewelry. The Gemara goes on and says, L'soif zol nidunya. And at the end, the price of jewelry dropped. Rashi adds, importantly, and the father-in-law wants to back out. He doesn't want to receive jewelry that's currently worth much less than he paid for. If, for example, he paid $100 for some jewelry, a specific, let's say, a necklace, and now that necklace costs $50. The father-in-law doesn't want to receive that necklace that's worth now $50 in exchange for the $100 that he put down for it. The Gemara goes on. Asu l'kamei de Rav Papa. Omar le. So Rav Papa said, you know, Asu l'kamei de Rav Papa. They came to Rav Papa, each one with their respective claims, and Rav Papa said, I paskis imoy kishara gavo shalkil kihashto. If you specified at the outset that you want delivery of the goods in accordance with, we'll say, benefiting from their fall in prices, so then you are entitled to that. So that you'll get, if you paid $100 for a specific necklace that now at the point of delivery is worth $50, so you take you get the necklace and you get $50 in change. Or possibly get two necklaces. V'ilo, if you didn't stipulate that condition at the outset that you want to have the benefit of the fall in prices, shokil kimekor, then you have to accept the item in accordance with its original price. Omru le rabbonan le Rav Papa. The rabbis asked Rav Papa, v'ilo posak, and if he didn't specify shokil kimekor, he has to take like the original rate. Mois ninu, mois lo konu. It was cash that was advanced, and cash doesn't clinch deals. Omar lehu, Rav Papa said, ano nami ligbule mishapara ko amina. I too agree that we're not talking about a deal that's clinched, but rather I'm talking about the Kabbalah, the receiving of a curse, the curse that one receives when one backs out of a deal. And what I meant to say, what I said, is as follows. If the condition was specified to get the benefit of the fall in price, Mocher Kohodarbe, and if the seller wants to back out and say, no, I don't want to give you the necklace and $50 in change. I want to give you the necklace and keep the $100 as is. And if now the mocher, the seller, wants to back out, mekabel ole, misha pora, then he has to realize that he's subject to the curse, the misha pora curse. E lo posak, if the stipulation or a condition was not specified to get the benefit of the fall in price, lokeach kohodabe, and the buyer might want to back out. He's disappointed. The thing, he paid $100, and now he's going to get a necklace now worth $50. So the purchaser might want to back out. We tell him, if you back out, mekablo le lokeach mishapora, then the customer will be subject to the curse for backing out. So that Rav Popa's point is that the payment of the money, although it doesn't clinch the deal, if you don't specify the desire to benefit from a fall in price, a customer who backs out will be subject to a Misha Pora. Now a question. Notice we have a long question marking. Omar Le Ravina Le Rav Popa. Umimai de Rabbonon hi de pligi ole de Reb Shimon de Amri mois lo konu viafilu hachi. Before we read further, I just want to point out that the style of this Gemara is such that in order to appreciate, we'll say, the reading, you have to read some long phrases in one breath, so to speak, in order to get a feel of the question. And even before we go further in the Gemara, we should point out that there's a machlokes tanoim between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbonon hold, like we've said till now, that paying cash does not clinch deals. Up till now, we mentioned that paying cash does create a situation that if one backs out of the deal, he is subject to a mi shapara, the curse. And we got a little more specific earlier, but that's the general idea behind the Rabbonon. The Rabbi Shimon is a Tana that disagrees and says that payment of money clinches deals. Not just an issue of getting a curse for backing out, but rather you can't back out. The deal has been finalized by paying the money. So with that in mind, we go back to the Gemara, and Omar Le Ravina Le Rav Papa, we're at the double underline phrase. Ravina asked Rav Papa, Umimai de Rabbonan hi de pligi ole de Rabbi Shimon de Amri, who is to say that we are within the shita of the Rabbonan? I would like to think that the Mishnah is in accordance with the Rabbonon, and up till now we've been explaining the Mishnah of Posek Imo Kishara Gavoa as the, if there's specification, explicit specification of wanting to benefit from the drop in prices, so then the customer can benefit from that, if the seller wants to back out, then you're talking about a mishapara, a curse. So that the Mishnah, as we have been explaining it till now, is in terms of back out resulting in a curse. So Ravino asks Rav Papa, who says that our Mishnah is in accordance with the Rabbanan, that argue with Rav Shimon de Amri Mois lo kanu. Cash payment does not clinch deals. Vafilu hochi posak kishar hagavah shokil kida hashda. Ilo posak shokil kida meikora. And even though it doesn't clinch deals, if you specified that you want kishar hagavah, so then you get the benefit of its current low price. And if not, you have to accept it the item at its original high price. Dilma Rebbe Shimon hi, Tiomar Moz Konos. Maybe the Mishnah is to be understood as authored by Rebbe Shimon that says money clinches deals. V'chi posa kishar gavoa, and when it was explicitly stated you want the benefit of the drop in prices, shokil kihashta, then you can get delivery of the item that whose deal was clinched at the low price. Ilo posak shokil kime kora, and if you didn't specify, then you have to accept the item at its original higher price. Mishom dekani lehu zuzi, because money that was paid clinches the deal. Avol lerabbanan, but according to the opinion of the rabbis, which for let's say practical halachic term, in practical halachic terms, would be more important for us to know, the majority opinion would hold bein posak bein lo posak, whether shar hagavoh was explicitly stated or not, shokil ki hashta, you always get the benefit of the fall in price. The daite dinish atarazilo, because a person's mindset, when you pay money, you expect the cheap price. So this then long question is a question directed to Rav Papa, where Rav Papa seemed to indicate that even as far as the shita of the Rabbanan is concerned, where the issue is simply misha porah, you have to specify explicitly your desire to benefit from the drop in price. The Ravina asked Rav Papa, who says maybe according to the Rabbanan, you never have to specify explicitly the desire to benefit from the drop in price. It's understood that people pay money for delivery at the best rate. Omar Lay, Rav Papa responds, Amor di Omar Rabbi Shimon Bechad Tara. Rabbi Shimon and his din that deals are clinched by paying money, and that a purchaser cannot back out because his money clinched the deal. He is known to have said that when you're dealing with one price, no issue of price fluctuation. Betray Tari mi Omar. Did Rav Shimon say his din that money clinches deals even when there are two prices, namely when there's a drop in price? Now, you have to add here, what Rav Papa is saying is that just like Rabbi Shimon will not say that deals are clinched when there's a fall in price, the Rabbanan as well will say that when there's a fall in price, we don't disagree. There's no argument between the Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan when there's a fall in price. In other words, if you're going to explain within Rav Shimon the idea of a need to specify benefit, that need to specify benefit for a drop in price is not stated in the context of clinched deals. It's stated in the context of the Mi Shepora. And when you're dealing on the Mi Shepora level, that there will be a curse for backing out, we're not going to make any distinction between Rabbi Shimon and the Rabbanan. Namely, Rabbi Shimon agrees that there would be a Mi Shepora for backing out. And as per everything we said above, if you specified the desire for benefiting from a drop in price, you specify, meaning you stated so explicitly, and then the seller wants to back out because he doesn't want to sell it at the low current price, he will be subject to a Misha Para. If it was not spelled out and the buyer wants to back out, so he, the buyer, will be subject to the Misha Para. So the what Rav Papa then is saying to Ravina, namely that according to the Rabbanan, the issue of stating explicitly is irrelevant. That's not so. You can see this in the Rashi on the second wide line under the Gemara text. Let's read it together. Mi Omar, would Reb Shimon have said that Mois Kinas when there's two prices, when there's a drop in price? Moidehu de Choser v'ein olov elo mishapora. Reb Shimon will agree that if there's a drop in price, and we'll say the seller wants to back out, he'll be subject to a mishapora. V'chi nami ukmes lo k'Reb Shimon. Lehinotzel mikilas mishapora matzrich lo lifsoi kishar gavoa. And even if you set up the Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon, and in order to be spared the curse of Mishapora, you would have to spell out that you want the benefit at the low price. And I think that the focus here is that the Lokeach wants to spare himself of the Mishapora. He would have had to specify benefit of low price. The low piresh, the choser bo, and if he didn't spell it out, then and he would back out, then mekabel mishapora. The wadin l'rabbonon, the same would apply to the rabbonon. The betray tari lo pligi. When it comes to two prices, they don't argue with one another. Namely, the rabbonon and Rav Shimon agree. There's no clinch deal. By fact, the money was paid. The only issue that comes up is backing out and that resulting in a curse. And for that to result, then the issue of having specified explicitly the desire to benefit from the fallen price becomes a necessity. And now the Gemara goes on to prove that Reb Shimon also functions or exists in the realm of Mishapora. In other words, not to think that Reb Shimon and payment of money always is an issue of clinching deals. Now, the Gemara continues, De'i lo te mahochi, if you don't say thusly, namely, if you don't agree that Reb Shimon, when it comes to two prices, a drop in price, that there is a, that it's an issue of merely mishapora, merely of curse, but not deal clinching, then mishapora belo keach le Reb Shimon mi islay, then would Reb Shimon would Reb Shimon be able to talk about a purchaser that is ever subject to a curse? V'chitei mahachinami, and if you say, yeah, that's right, that according to Rabbi Shimon, a lokeach is never, let's say, viewed in the context of mishapora, but rather the deal is always, when a purchaser pays money, the deal is finalized, is totally clinched. Well, the Hatanya, but we have a Tanaic source that will indicate otherwise, namely that according to Rabbi Shimon, a lokeach, a purchaser, could be subject to a, I would say, a mere mishapara. When I say mere shapara, means, I say only a curse, even though a curse is a serious matter, but it's a lower level than an actual deal being clinched. A lower level in let's say, in the commercial community. So if you are going to say that Reb Shimon does not hold from Mishapora by a purchaser, v'hatanya, but we have the following source. Now the following source is presented in a somewhat abbreviated fashion, but we wrote in between the lines, this is Reb Shimon speaking, and it says, Mikol mokim kachalocha, though that is the halacha, avol omru chachomim mishapora, namely, even though a deal is not absolutely clinched, the chachomim nevertheless said, if you back out, there's a mishapora. My mikol mokom, what does Rav Shimon mean when he says that expression? Lav deloshna lokeach deloshna mocher mikabel ole mishapora. what Rav Shimon is trying to say by saying that thusly, that even though the deal is not clinched, nevertheless, there is a mishapar, there is a curse, no distinction between a lokeach or a mocher. A lokeach could be subject to a curse as well as the mocher. Now, what we want to emphasize is that a lokeach, a purchaser, could back out. In other words, the deal hasn't been clinched, but if he backs out, he will be subject to a mishapara. Ah, but isn't Rav Shimon famous for his stance that paying cash, when a customer pays for cash, the deal is totally clinched? Eloki koma Rav Shimon b'chatara. Rav Shimon said that a lokeach cannot back out. That's when you're dealing with a static, unchanging price. But trey tari lo amar. But in an environment where there's two prices, meaning there's a fall in price, then Rav Shimon didn't say that the paying of money will clinch the deal. But rather, once there's payment of money and then one of the parties backs out, there is a curse. Omar le Rav Acha bre de Rova le Rav Ashi. Rav Acha addresses a question to Rav Ashi regarding the case that opened up this whole sugya. We go back to the top of the page, the second line from the top. V'tepukle the shliach shavyo meikara. Shouldn't we understand here that there is no mishapara in this case with the one who was purchasing the jewelry? The one who was sent to purchase the jewelry was sent as an agent. He wasn't the actual buyer of it. We know that a buyer of an item, if he backs out, so we can talk in terms of mishapara, being subject to a curse. But in this story, there's no room for introducing the issue of a curse to begin with. The fellow that was sent, we saw the son-in-law that was sent as an agent of the father-in-law. And either way, there's no mishapara. And Rashi elaborates, and we can look at Rashi together on the fifth line under the Gemara text, the tepuk le the ein kan mishapara eitzel lokeach nedunyazu, the purchaser, so to speak, of the jewelry, of the dowry, isn't subject to a curse. The hashliach shavya, he was a mere agent, shel beis chomiv. He was an agent of his father-in-law, asu shaliach lifsok, to pay the money for delivery of the goods. The chomiv chozer bo, and the father-in-law is the one backing out. Umabi yodo shozer lasos. So what can he do, the son-in-law? What power does he have here when the father-in-law, who's the actual owner of the money, he is the one backing out? Why should the son-in-law be subject to a curse? The chamuanami, the father-in-law as well, la bakibuli mishaparahu, he too isn't subject to a mishapara. The Motzi Omar, he, the father-in-law, can say, Hoya l'cho lifso kishara gavoa. Now you, the son-in-law, you should have specified the desire to benefit from the drop in price. And you didn't do that. And now I don't want to take the jewelry at the cheap rate. Uluskuni shadartich v'lovisi. I sent you to make things good for me, to operate, to function as for my benefit, not to mess me up. Ubedvar ivus, and when it comes to an ivus, with the word we just read, the lola avisi, is to matters where there's mess up. Bame shohoya olav lesakein, in a case where you should have done things in a beneficial fashion, lo nasa shlucha, you aren't even my agent. You're nothing. You're an agent for me if you function for my benefit. But if you act or behave in ways that are to my detriment, you're not my agent. So who's supposed to get a Misha Pora over here? That's Rav Acha's question to Rav Ashi. Why in this discussion did we certainly saw Rav Papa mention that in the case of a back out, without getting into the details of specification of Shargav or not, but in the case of back out, there is a Misha Pora in the let's say atmosphere or in the balance. Omar Lay. So Rav Ashi says, "Betagro dezavenu mazvin." This father-in-law, son-in-law setup wasn't one of a father-in-law merely sending his son-in-law as an agent, but it was something else. Rashi explains, "Betagro dezavenu mazvin, lo shliach nase." He, the son-in-law, wasn't an agent of the father-in-law. Ela hu posak im chasono, the chasono posak im achirim. The father-in-law made a deal with the son-in-law. My understanding is that the father-in-law simply gave money to the son-in-law. Here, take this money and try to find a good deal, so to speak, but not as an agent, but maybe we'll call him as an investor. So the father-in-law invested money with his son-in-law. The term tagor is really a merchant, so the son-in-law wasn't functioning as an agent, but as a merchant, so that there was a deal between father-in-law and son-in-law. The chasono posakim achirim, and then the son-in-law took the money, and he made a deal with others, with the producer, jewelry producers. U mistaker, and was anticipating profiting, making money from this. So as a result of that, the son-in-law, when dealing with the suppliers, wasn't simply working, functioning as an agent of as a shliach, an emissary of the father-in-law, but he was functioning as a on his own, trying to pay money and get a good deal from whatever took place. So therefore, there is room to speak in terms of a mi shapara. He, the son-in-law, was a first line direct purchaser and not merely an agent of the father-in-law. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah text, we glance at the side. We have a no say topic heading. Halvoas chitin bechitin lezera la'arisov. A field owner loans wheat grains to his sharecroppers who will plant the wheat, and they will eventually pay him back with wheat. And we will say that there is no prohibition here of the loan form of saw basaw. We've seen this in the past. We've used the more conventional, let's say, cup of sugar example, where, technically speaking, one is not allowed to loan an item and expect that same item, same quantity in return at a later time. Because when that quantity of that same item is returned later on, it might very well have gone up in price, gone up in value. Yet, in our Mishnah, we will see that a field owner can give a quantity of wheat grains for planting and get back that same quantity of wheat grains, and it's not a problem of measure for measure, the saw-by-saw example that we just described. Hagemor tevarer, the Gemara will clarify. Im yesh lechalek bein im yorad heoris lasode leivdo lemikre shadayim lo yorad lesocha. A distinction will be made between cases of the oris, the sharecropper, having descend it into the property to cultivate it, versus a case where he hasn't yet started the work. So in simple terms, the Mishnah will be describing the permission of a saw basaw loan, and we need to explain how is that allowed, when in general, two common neighbors, homeowners, cannot loan products, and expect the same product, same quantity returned later on, as we explained, because of the concern of the possible price rise. The Mishnah. Malve Odom es Arisov. Arisov is the plural form of Oros, a sharecropper. So a field owner can loan to his Oris, Arisim, Chitim, Bechitim, Lezera, Avalo Lechol. If the field owner loans wheat grains for planting purposes, and that quantity will be, let's say, returned later on, that's okay, but not for eating purposes. If a man has workers that want to have a meal of chitin, and they'll pay you back chitin later on, that we will not allow. Shoyer Angliol malve es arisov chitin bechitin lezera biyoker v'huzlu o bezol v'hukru. Rabbi Gamliel used to loan his sharecroppers wheat to be returned later on, for the loan was for planting purposes, and he did so even though it was in an environment where originally it was worth a lot and the price fell, or it was worth less and the price rose. Notel mehen kishar hazol. He would take back from them in accordance with the, we'll say, the cheap rate. V'lo mipnei shalocha kein, not because the letter of the law demands that. Elo shirotze lahachmir al atzmoi. So that as far as Rabban Gamliel's behavior is concerned, if he loaned, a pound of wheat that was worth $10, and at the time of return it was worth only $5, he would accept the pound of wheat that's actually worth less when payback time arrived. And the Mishnah suggests that that's not the letter of the law, but he wanted to accept upon himself that stringency. Similarly, Rabban Gamliel, in accepting the stringency upon himself, if he had loaned the saw of chitin that at payback time went up in price, so that if he had loaned him a saw of chitin that was worth $10, and at payback time the saw would be worth $20, he would accept as payment half a saw. And as we mentioned, Rabbi Gamliel was behaving in a way that wasn't letter of the law, but he accepted this stringency upon himself. There is a great amount of detail that remains to be explained, and that's what we will see in the Gemara. Tonu Rabbanan, malve odom es arisov chitim bechitim lezera. Bamed vom amurim, this heter of loaning the sharecroppers chitin to be returned later on if the loan is for planting purposes, this is allowed shelo yorad, where the sharecropper didn't start cultivating the field. Yorad literally means descend into the field. Avo yorad usher, but if he descended in the field and started working, then it is not allowed. This too will be explained. My shno tana didon, the lo komaflik bein yorad uvein lo yorad. What is the difference between our Mishnah that made no distinction between his starting the work versus not starting to work. As opposed to the Tana Bora, the Brisa, the source we just read, that does make the distinction between his starting versus not starting. Omar Rava, Rav Idi Asbara Nihali. So Rava tells us that Rav Idi explained this to me. Ba'asra de Tana Didon, in the location of our Mishnah, Arisa Yohiv Bizra, it is expected that sharecroppers provide the seed. Bain Yorad Ubain Lo Yorad, whether he started working or he didn't start working, Kama Dolo Yohiv Bizra, as long as he does not provide the seed, Mosi Mesalikle, the owner can remove him. Namely, even if after he started working, since the homeowner could remove him, V'chi Konochis, when he descends into the field without providing the seed, Lebotzer Mehachi Konochis, then he as a sharecropper understands that his work will be for less. Botzer means less than the going rate. So that if sharecroppers would receive 50% of the harvest as their, say, pay for their work, this sharecropper that's not providing the seed understands at the outset that he is going to be receiving 50% minus a saw, so that it's not the saw that's returned later on isn't a repayment of a loan, but rather it's a specific oris arrangement in this case where the oris is not behaving or not functioning like the standard arisim, the standard sharecroppers in the area. He, this kind of oris, understands that he will be receiving a smaller percentage of the harvest. So you're not dealing whatsoever with a loan and a payback of a loan, but rather you're dealing with a sharecropper that understands he is going to get a saw less than 50% as his take. Let's look at Rashi, who explains this matter. Rashi that we're looking at, you can see we have a star in the Rashi to help it easier for you to find it. Motzi Misalik Le Balabayas. The Balabayas could remove an Oris that doesn't himself provide the seed. Hilka Hafilu Yoran Ufar Horsha. Therefore, even if he descended into the field, started plowing, Hayulu Biad Balabayas Lesalka Bishvil Shein Lo Zera, since theoretically, the owner could remove him since he is not providing the seed, even though he started plowing, which is, we'll say, the plowing is done before the seeding. So he started work there, but he's not going to be providing the seed. Kishelava mimenu v'zorea, when that sharecropper turns to the homeowner, to the field owner, and says, could you loan me the seed? And when the seed goes up in value, the sharecropper will supposedly be returning to him increased value seed. Ein zu halva. That's not the payback of a loan. Ela lebotzer mehachi nochis. When the field owner provided the seed, when he wasn't expected to, it was understood right at the outset, you, sharecropper, are you going to get a smaller percentage of the harvest. Arehu kiyarid l'secha me'achshav. It is viewed, therefore, as when he descends into the field, right from the outset, from now, almenas shiito balabayas hazera tchila mechelek hamagia l'oris v'oris ito hasha'ar b'schar tirchov ito pochos misharisim kishir hazera. The balabayas will be receiving the quantity of seed that he had loaned the oris. He will be receiving that, we'll say off the top, that amount is going to be taken from the percentage that the Oris would have otherwise received had he provided the seed. The rest, the Oris takes as pay for his work. And in reality, he's going to be taking, at least suggested before, 50% minus the amount that he received from the field owner. The Almanas Ken Yorad, and it was with that intent that he started the work at the outset. Shito Pochos Mishari Sim Kishira Zera, that he will get a little less than other sharecroppers. How much less? The amount of seed that he received from the Balabais. That amount, that much less, he, this particular sharecropper, will be receiving. So the Mishnah that made no distinction between whether the work started or didn't start is talking about that asra, that location where sharecroppers are expected to provide the seed, and he, this particular sharecropper, did not do so. Be'asra detana bora, in the locale of the Brisa, where a distinction was made, Mori Ara Yohiv Bizra. There, the field owner is expected at the outset to provide the seed. Before we go further, let's take a look at Rashi, three lines from the bottom. Mori Ara Yohiv Bizra. Vize Hoya Karka Shelo Yofe. Vishino Mimino Goir Lahatil Al Heoris. Here we have a case where someone had particularly valuable land, particularly rich land, and he changed, he behaved differently than the standard communal practice. In what sense? He placed upon the Oris the obligation of providing the seed. Hilkoch im posak kein imo betrilaso kodem shiorad. The motzi mesalik lay. If there was an understanding, a specified understanding, before any work started, that if you, the Oris, don't provide the seed, again, the expectation for the Oris to provide the seed was a departure from the standard practice in that area. Therefore, if a specific condition was stipulated before he started his work, where the homeowner can remove him, can say, "Listen, I expected you to provide the seed, and you didn't." Kinochis, when he descends into the field, lebotzer mehachinochis, he started working with that understanding that he would get that much less of the harvest. The ein zu hava, in that case, it's not alone. Avol yorad, if he started the work, umitchilasoi lo posak imo shei azera shelo, v'acher mikem nisratz me'elo v'yadei kabbalas domim u'matana. And it wasn't specified at the outset that the sharecropper would provide the seed, but he agreed later, through some kind of payment or gift. Ein yiridaso achshav l'secha d'neimo l'botzer mehachinochis. In a case like that, where it wasn't stipulated at the outset, we cannot say that his initial descent into the field was with the anticipation that he would get less. and therefore, when the Oris tells the Balabayas that I'm not going to provide the seed, but you provide the seed, v'halva he gabei v'yosser. In that case, it's then a loan on the part of the field owner to the sharecropper, and under those circumstances, it would be prohibited to get back the same quantity of seed later, as is prohibited under the prohibition of se'ah b'se'ah. let's go back to the Gemara. Ba'asra d'tana bara, in the locale of the Braisa where that distinction was made, Mori ara yohiv bizra, the landowner ordinarily would provide the seed. And as we saw in Rashi, there was an internal personal arrangement between that specific field owner and the sharecropper to provide the seed. And if he didn't, then e lo yorad, if the sharecropper didn't start working, the motzi misalik lay, where the field owner could remove him, and he didn't, but instead agreed to provide the seed, then we say ki konochis, when the sharecropper started working, the botzer mehochi konochis. He did so with the understanding that he would work with that, receiving the accepted percentage minus that amount that the landowner loaned him. And I say the word loan, but maybe that's not a good word. But that amount that the landowner provided him. However, Iyorad, if he started working without all of the specifics spelled out that we mentioned before, but he started working with the understanding that the homeowner would provide the seed, and the landowner didn't initially provide and tried to get the sharecropper to agree to provide the seed, and then the sharecropper didn't, but asked the landowner to provide him, then it's a loan. And since he started working with the general accepted practice that the landowner would have provided the seed, delomotzi misalikle, this is now a point in time where the landowner can't remove the sharecropper, the landowner agrees to loan him the seed. Usser, then it's usser for the landowner to receive that quantity of seed payback later on. Tonu Rabbonan, Oimer Odom Lechavero. We continue at the top of Daf Ayin Hey. Person can say to his friend, Halveni Kur Chitin V'Koytseitz Lo Domim. Loan to me a kur, is a dry measure of chitim, of wheat, and establish a price. In other words, there's a known market rate for wheat, and assign a price, a value, a cost of the wheat that is being borrowed right now. So if a kur of chitim costs $100, so the borrower understands he's getting $100 in wheat. Huzlu, if when payback time comes, wheat becomes cheaper, noisein lo chitim, then the borrower will give the lender back a kur of chitim. Hukru, if a kur of chitim becomes more expensive, then noisein demayim, then he will pay $100. If the price of wheat goes up, so the wheat itself, a kur of chitim, would be worth $120. It wouldn't be acceptable then for him to pay back the kur of chitim when originally what he received was that which was worth $100 in wheat. To pay back the wheat that's worth more now would be like ribbis. Regarding the huzlu situation, though, a person borrowed a kur of chitim worth $100. At payback time, the same kur was worth $50. Why should the lender accept a kur worth $50 when the halo kotsats, they had set a price to it? So even if it went down in price, let the lender receive the cash value. Just like you said, if It goes up in price. The lender receives the cash value that they had established at the outset. If it goes down in price, let the lender receive the cash value that they had established. Omar Rav Sheshes, Hochi Komar. Rav Sheshes explains that the source should be understood thusly. In low kotsats, if they didn't set a price of the core chitin that was lent initially, huzlu, if the core of chitin goes down in price and value, noitel chitov, he gets back a core of chitin. Hukru, if the wheat becomes more expensive and they had not set a price, well, no same demand. He gets their cash value. He cannot receive a core of chitim because that's now worth more. So you have a situation of a borrower returning greater value than that which he received. But in the event that they had established a price at the beginning and the price of wheat dropped, the lender would be entitled to demand the, in cash terms, the value of the wheat that he lent initially. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.